If you're struggling in your career, business, or life, this podcast is for you. 9/11 survivor Ari Schoenbrunn shares inspiring interviews so you too can rise like a phoenix from the ashes to live your best life. Here's your host, Ari.
Welcome to Whispers and Bricks. My name is Ari Schoenbrunn. I'm your host. I have with me today a special guest, Kim Curry. As a 33-year radio broadcaster, Kim Curry was forced into retirement after a diagnosis of multiple sclerosis at the age of 50. Come Get Me Mother was a two-year writing education that doubled as therapy. Now he's living in Loveland, Colorado with his wife and enjoying life. He's a dedicated foodie who loves to cook. He's an international soccer fan, a lifelong Denver Broncos fan, an MS advocate who makes the rounds at different men with MS meetings in Northern Colorado. Writing is his new hobby. Please help me welcome Kim Curry.
Ari, thank you very much for having me. I appreciate it a lot. I'm honored that a guy like you would take the time to talk to a guy like me, because in reality, I would like to interview you. So,
well, maybe that'll happen someday.
You know, someday I should get that podcast thing going again. I told you about that. I used to do
that. There you go.
Do it again. I would be honored to have you as a guest, but honored to be here as yours.
I would be honored to be on yours as well. I think you've got an incredible story, but I'm not going to let the cat out of the bag. Let's get started. Now I'm going to start. First of all, Kim,
yes,
is an interesting name for a man. Especially if you're not Korean. So
these are all valid points.
Is it short for something?
Ari, my first name is Kimbrel, K-I-M-B-R-E-L. Now, my mother, it's a family last name, but that really wasn't important to my mother. My mother always told me that it was a male version of Kimberly. But I've never met another man in my life named Kimbrel. So my mother fooled me years and years ago.
Wow. That's interesting. That's really interesting. And I've never heard the name Kimberl. And I've heard of Kimberly, and I know many Kims that are Kimberlys, but I never heard a guy except for Kim Jong-un. Yep. All right. Other than that, I never heard of another Kim.
Well, but, okay. Actually, the name Kimberl, there's a baseball player. His last name is Kimberl.
Really?
But that could be, remember I said it was a family last name for me. So there may be a distant relative somewhere that I don't know of, but it's never been a first name. I've never met another. So,
wow.
There we go.
Wow.
All right, sir.
Well, anyway, as you know, the name of the podcast is Whispers and Bricks. And the whispers are those voices telling us what the right thing to do is. And they represent the good in life. And the bricks represent the bad things that we go through in life. And let's be real, everybody has a brick thrown at them at some point in time or the other. Sometimes it's several bricks. Sometimes it's little bricks. Sometimes it's big bricks. But everybody goes through something. Now, prior to this recording, you and I had a chance to talk and get to know each other a little bit. And I learned that growing up, life was pretty good for you and that you had some amazing opportunities. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
I was a really lucky guy. At the age of 17, my father, who worked at the only radio station in my hometown, came home from work one day and asked me if I would babysit at the radio station for the general manager. Well, I thought he meant babysit the GM's kids, because that's how I made my money in high school, is I babysat my parents' friends' kids. Well, I get to the radio station and come to find out he wanted me to babysit the Sunday morning God show at this little town, and this one radio station, they would record all the previous week's church services and play them back on Sunday morning. And nobody really wanted that job. And so it went to this high school kid. But you got to understand, Ari, you know, first of all, none of my friends listened to it because it was my hometown station. We all listened to the rock and roll stations over in the other town. But when I heard my voice for the first time on a radio station, I can remember the first thing I said was, "This is KRLN, Canyon City, Colorado, the station with the news reputation." And I heard that in my headphones, and it was an immediate turn on. I thought, that's my voice on the radio. And that's all it took. I got stuck and had a 33-year radio career that started there. So
Wow, 33 years. That's a long time.
Well, in reality, you know, it could have, I wish it would have gone a lot longer, but as we talk about, that's why we're here, is, you know, I started at 17, and by the time I was 50, I'd had a really long and prosperous and successful career. Within the first 6 months of leaving college, I ended up in Miami, Florida, working at one of the legendary radio stations of that year, of that era's top 40. 6 months after I went to work for that guy, he got dismissed, and I went to work across the street at the number one radio station in Miami, Florida, for top 40 radio at the time. These two people were very influential in my career. I worked for both of them about 98% of the time, either as a program director. Jerry Clifton had a bunch of radio stations around America eventually, and I went to program for him. And Bill Tanner, he and I were always partners. And with he was the program director, I was his assistant program director. So these guys were really influential in my career. I was in Miami and San Antonio, Texas, in Washington, D.C., and Baltimore. In each of these towns I'm telling you about, in my memoir, there are stories in there about in San Antonio, we had a promotion where we signed the first woman to a professional football contract.
Wow.
But I had an MS exacerbation that I didn't know what it was. I thought one day my neighbor had gone away on vacation, and I went to take the newspaper out of their bushes. And as I walked back, my hand was covered in fire ants. And I thought a week later, nothing happened to me immediately, but a week later, I started having this vision loss in my right eye. And my hands started to curl, and I started feeling very uncomfortable. I felt very foggy, and it just went away. These exacerbations happened in every town I lived in. These are MS things that were lingering in my life that I didn't know were coming. I didn't know what they were. In Washington, D.C., I had a really unique exacerbation, and it happened because of during my radio show at night. I was the kid. They called me Kid Curry, so I had the nighttime radio show. So I appealed to high school kids, and that was the primary focus of my show. But in Washington, D.C., because it's so political, I had a feature at night, the last 5 minutes of my show. I'd have people call in. I called it bed check, and I'd let them call in, and they could make comments about their school buddy or make a joke about their little brother or, you know, dish on a teacher. But in Washington, D.C., that feature became political. It got taken over by politics, and it was really unique. I would usually pick up the phone and hear little kids, but I'd pick up the phone there and I'd hear adults. And one of the adults I would hear in Washington, D.C. was a guy by the name of Frank DeFramer. I'd pick up the phone. He'd say, "Hey, it's me, Frank DeFramer, and I'm over here at the White House. And the president just heard your bed check, and he thinks you're funny." And I thought the guy was just playing on me. So I'd laugh, ha, 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 ha. And yeah. I'd move on to the next call. But Frank DeFramer got through a few times and kept making the same joke. And one night I picked the phone up and I said, "Frank DeFramer, who are you? What are you talking about?" He said, "Well, it just so happens that at the White House, there is a person who is in charge of the frames of the portraits, and that's me. They call me Frank DeFramer. I'm a Secret Service agent. I work here in the White House, and the president comes down a lot, and he's heard your bed check." Well, I thought that was very cool. So as far as I knew, there was this guy who'd made up this story. It sounded real, but it could have been made up about being the guy who was the framer at the White House. So I leave Washington, D.C. after a few months on the radio there, and then I move up to Baltimore, Maryland. My girlfriend shows up with her grandma one day, and we're having dinner. And I happen to mention to grandma this story about Frank DeFramer. She said, "Well, if you know somebody at the White House, you got to take me there for a tour." I was like, oops. So I had to make that phone call to the White House where I need to speak to Frank DeFramer. And the lady at the other end says, "Oh, Frank. Yeah, hang on. I'll get him." Well, he must be real. So he picked up the phone. I told him my story. I said, "Frank, first of all, I'm amazed that you're real. Frank, I need to come and bring my girlfriend's grandma for a tour of the White House." So he says, you know what, man, you come on over whenever you're ready. I'll let the guys know you're coming. So you just drive up and tell them you're here to see Frank DeFramer. I'll let him know Kid Curry's coming. We'll all be excited to see you. And I was like, well, this will be fun. Yeah. So, you know, this is just after the Reagan assassination attempt. And there had been no changes in security around the White House. You could still drive up. You could go down the street and turn in to the road that looked like it went up to the side of the White House. Right. So first of all, I went around once thinking that can't be it. And then it looked like the right one to drive up. So I started driving up. Now, what you'll learn, well, those who have anyone who knows about MS, MS is a stress-related disease. The more stress you're under sometimes, the more the exacerbations that are going on in your brain. Remember, these are scars on your brain. They light up. So I'm driving up this road, which I just thought, well, it looks like it's the right one. And as I'm driving up the road, here comes the Secret Service, and they're all pulling their guns on me, and they're taking their rifles out, and I keep driving because I'm thinking, well, I'll just tell them it's Kid Curry. All of a sudden, I lost total vision in my right eye. My hands curled and my shoulders went up, and I couldn't even move my legs. It was all I could do to stop the car. And when I opened the car door, I fell out. And these guys are coming, all guns loaded, and I'm yelling, "It's Kid Curry. I'm here to see Frank DeFramer." And they're like, Kid, how are you? Can we get you a wheelchair? I'm like, oh, geez. The exacerbation waned. I told him to get the wheelchair for grandma. Yeah. And we went through the tour of the White House, and it was a unique friendship I had with a guy by the name of Frank DeFramer. But that was another exacerbation that I had no clue was going on in my body. I didn't know I had MS. I just thought, well, you know, the pressure of what's going on just threw me off. But time goes by, and I end up back in Miami. And through a series of circumstances, the two guys I told you about in the very beginning, Jerry Clifton and Bill Tanner, end up at this one radio station as consultants. Well, first Bill was the morning show guy for a while, and then he left, and then he and Jerry teamed up as consultants. Through a series of circumstances, I went to Miami as the young radio boy back when the song by the Eagles, "The New Kid in Town," came out. So I was the young teenage DJ, and then 1976, and then 1996, they finally thought they could give me the radio station and let me run it and see what happens. I was fortunate in that I was given a staff of very talented people who I'd grown up with, a bunch of them, and we knew Miami very well. I just had a different approach. I really thought you could do top 40 radio in Spanglish in Miami. It had been done in Spanglish on Spanish stations, mm-hmm. but there was never a top 40 station that really went at the market playing top 40 songs and speaking Spanglish, and then trying to lean on finding songs that would cross over from Spanish to English. And if we didn't have the right one, we would make them. We made an English version in my office. It was my idea, an English version of the Macarena, if anybody's ever heard of that song. There is an English version that we produced in my office because we really were going after the Miami audience. And I felt I had the right way to do it. I'd been there long enough to know the influence of the Cuban market. And everybody was Spanglish anyway. Why couldn't you play top 40 music and be Spanglish? Well, it just so happens it created the highest ratings in the history of the station. We went 9 years with incredible ratings. But because of the type A personality I am and the seriousness I took of my job, it's almost like I was doing 9 years of constant stress on the MS. And I was having exacerbations again, not knowing why I couldn't get out of bed. Mm-hmm. I just call in and say, I'm not coming in today. Mm-hmm. And then right around the time of the tsunami, the tsunami happened around 2000. Somewhere in 2004, there was a tsunami somewhere. We saw it on TV. I was home with, I brought my wife, my family home during the holidays. And we were watching some of these things go on TV because my mother was very interested in the tsunami in general, had no idea. So we were watching a PBS show. And while I was watching it, she says to me, "There's something wrong with you. Your eyes are going crazy. What's the matter?" And I think what was happening was I was so intently watching the PBS thing on the tsunami that my body gave out again, and I was having an exacerbation My mom insisted I go back to Miami and get with a doctor. 3 months after that, I was finally diagnosed with multiple sclerosis. Now, the way that diagnosis happened, the way I got out of the business was like this. First of all, not only was my, could she see my eyes weren't functioning correctly, she could see I was weak in my arms and I wasn't walking straight. That really took and went and accelerated over the next 3 or 4 months. So as I was being treated or they were testing me for multiple sclerosis, I was in the midst of a nonstop exacerbation. And it scared me. It scared my wife. I suddenly couldn't walk across the parking lot at work. I couldn't walk down the hallways. I'd bang off the side of the hallways. And then so finally, I was over to corporate meeting. You know, our corporate office was in Naples, and Miami, of course, is where my radio station was. But I was over in Naples at a corporate meeting. Around 5 o'clock in the afternoon, my doctor called my cell phone. So I left the corporate meeting with all the geniuses. I went into a room and she said, "Mr. Curry, I know you have multiple sclerosis. I can see it right here. Everything we see says multiple sclerosis, and you're in an exacerbation, and we need to see you on Monday so we can decide your next steps." So that was Friday afternoon. We need to see you on Monday.
That must have been one heck of a brick that you got hit with, you know.
I can tell you that as I was driving back that night, that once again, I never knew what even MS was. So as I'm driving back to Miami, I'm calling my wife and she's doing the 2005 version of Google and she's reading to me about multiple sclerosis. And I didn't know you could die from MS. And I knew how bad I was getting. I knew that the months prior to where I was sitting at that moment, things were really bad. So on Monday morning, I walked into my GM and said, "I'm done. I've been diagnosed with MS. I got to get out of here. Something's really wrong with me and I need to stop now." So my brick hit me and then I stopped because I knew something was really going on.
And how old were you at that point?
50 years old. It was
50 years old.
2005. So
you had a career, you were on top of the world.
Yes, sir.
And then bam, you get hit. How did you deal with that?
Well, Ari, you know, being first of all, I was lucky at a very young age to be the nighttime DJ on one of the most famous radio stations in America in Miami, Florida. So you got to think that 1976, there was not the internet. So you had, you know, one or two top 40 radio stations to listen to. And it just so happens the one that I was on in Miami was a superior. It was the first radio station to give away $50,000 in cash and did it like 8 times in a row. When I was in college, we used to study this radio station. When I was in college, it was unlike any station I'd ever heard of. And because it had a real Miami feel, unlike any station anywhere else in America, industrialized WABC and all the big ABC New York stations, they were industrialized where you could hear echo and reverb in their sound. Well, none of that happened in Miami. It was on the FM dial and it was clean. And mm-hmm. We did theater of the mind radio where the boss wouldn't mind if we stopped for 5 minutes and put on a radio play as long as it was funny. And right. So it was unlike any station I'd ever been in. I was very fortunate to be sitting in a situation at that time and working with these people. And so I, when you're that guy and then suddenly you leave that radio station and people are trying to get close to Kid Curry my entire career. So then, you know, when you're programming Power 96 in Miami, it's as big as programming the biggest station in LA. So people always wanted to be close to me, but after my diagnosis, remember, I'm bouncing off walls. I'm not walking straight. I'm right. Now got a cane. And then I went to crutches. Then I ended up in a wheelchair. And nobody wants to be close to the guy in the wheelchair. And when I left Miami, it bothered my wife more than it bothered me because I wanted the radio station to go on and move forward past me. But nobody really checked on me. I mean, I'd had a career with friends for 33 years, some I'd known forever. and nobody called to find out if I was okay. So it was a real mental mess for a long time. And physically, I was deteriorating rapidly. So it was a scary 8 years. And then at that point, Ari, you know, my doctor was really, there was only four or five medicines in 2005, when I first got diagnosed, there was only four or five MS medicines. 8 years later, there's now eight MS medicines. And the doctor said, we've got to change something, man, because you are going down fast. And I was. So we changed the medicine. And then the doctor said something that is very controversial, and you and I've had this discussion, but there's all sorts of reams of information that says that vitamin D is good for you. So my doctor was telling me that you were going to change your medicine, and I want you to take at least 30,000 IUs of vitamin D every day. Mm-hmm. Well, Ari, I'm an old radio DJ, and I used to make fun of my mother when I put her on the radio and she'd have a cold and she'd say, oh, you got to make sure you take your vitamin C. And I say, mother, vitamins do nothing. So it took 6 months for me. Well, not for me to be convinced. My wife convinced me that I needed to take this vitamin D. So I made the change of the medicine. 6 months later, I start taking these massive IU doses of vitamin D. And 6 months after that, my condition leveled off. Strikingly, my wife could immediately notice that my thoughts were clear again, that my hands, they still curl, but they don't curl as much as they used to. Mm-hmm. My voice, which had been completely taken away with MS, there's a condition that happens in the throat. And my voice began to come back. And so for the next 3 or 4 years, I go from this terrible, I go from a terrible decline to suddenly everything just leveled off. And that was a mental problem, because then I'm like, well, wait a minute. If I'm not going to die, what am I going to do? I mean, I was pretty sick. And then suddenly, 3 years after this medicine change, things had gone pretty consistently nowhere. And so if I'm not going to die, what do I do now? And that's when I had the thought that I wanted to write my story. That's when I thought, you know what? I will write the story. I will write my memoir. I'll write the stories of my radio career. And that's what my memoir is full of. All the stories of the, you know, I get to Miami a week after I'm there. I've had breakfast with Marilyn McCoo and Billy Davis of the Fifth Dimension. My wow. First radio interview was with Bob Hope. You remember Muhammad Ali was still training at the Fifth Street Gym. So he would be in and out of the radio station. I went from a small little town in Colorado where there was one radio station to a station that had, it was Hollywood. And, you know, it was very exciting as a young kid. It was a very good career to have, but, you know, things changed and I wanted to write this whole story. So I wrote the story of the markets I was in, the fun I had with the people I was working with. And then I wanted to tell the story of my multiple sclerosis diagnosis and how I dealt with that mentally. And then if, as you read the story, you realize my path of it, it's expensive to be disabled in America. I didn't know that until I became disabled. It costs to be disabled in America. And that's in my book. You hear that, you read that process. And the part of the story I really like is the story about my wife, which we'll get into that in a moment. And there was a point when a friend of mine, after I said I had 3 years of really no increase of my condition and things had leveled off, an old friend of the radio business He picked me up out of nowhere. I hadn't spoken to anybody since I left the business. This guy and I traded phone calls or emails once a year because of our birthdays. His is April 1st, mine's April 20th. So that would be we'd once a year, maybe every other year would email or something for birthdays. But this guy eventually, when he just decided, I got a call one day and he says, listen, he is responsible for, you know, you see the Grammys, everybody sees the Grammys, but those people wouldn't get those awards if it wasn't for the promoters who get the songs on the radio stations in America. So my friend Vince what is his magazine, the Street Information Magazine, Network Magazine, had a big ceremony every year where they gave awards to these record promoters for getting the Taylor Swift song, the Grammy, for getting, you know, Wyclef Jean a Grammy. So he would have this ceremony and give these guys these awards. This is in the business. This is not for people. And it became a very big ceremony. And one day I got a call and he said, listen, I'm going to fly you out here to New York with your family. I want you to come to the information awards and I want to give you a lifetime achievement award, which thrilled me because I had been completely ripped out of my life of show business. And then suddenly a friend of mine said, wait a minute, man, I want you to come and see your friends again. So I get out to New York. I see him before the ceremony. He's all dressed up in this big wool coat and he's got a hat on, a scarf. And we just see each other just prior to, like, to thank him for flying me out because he's the host of this big thing that's going on, this awards ceremony. So he goes off and does the awards, gets me on stage. I mean, I can't tell you the superstar who actually picked me up in my wheelchair and put me on the stage, but there were superstars. There were rock and roll artists. There were promoters. I saw friends I hadn't seen my entire 33-year radio career at that ceremony. And they gave me the award and I cried like a baby to see my friends again. It really felt good. So Vince sees me after the awards ceremony. He says, we have to have breakfast tomorrow. I'll see you over at the hotel. And then Vince shows up the next day and he says, well, the reason I had you here is because I'm dying. And it just felt good for me to do this for you, to bring you out and have let you see your friends again. And then he told me, he said, man, you can't sit around. You got to come back and do something. I thought maybe I could get back in the radio business, music business. It had been, 8, 9, 10 years. That was out of it. There's no way I could help anybody there. But that's when I decided I wanted to write my story, which is where my memoir came from. It was that, too, was a fun learning process. Being a DJ is not the same thing as writing a story on paper. So I had to hire a coach. I hired a lady to teach me how to write. And then once I got finished with my memoir, I continued writing. I've got another book out. That's the second one over there. And my third book will be released here within the next month or so. A best-selling author has read this book and is backing the book because he likes the story. So I've gone from being a radio DJ to being a writer. I come in my office every day. I sit here almost every day. It's great therapy. Ari, you know, you wrote a book. I heard the tale of how you eventually got the book written, but you know, that was therapeutic.
Absolutely.
And for a guy like you, with what you've had to experience in your life, that process for you to actually get it down. I know what it's like for me, but to go with what you've gone through, remarkable work, my friend.
Thank you.
I've read some of your stuff and seen some of your interviews, and what I do is nothing compared to what you've had to go through.
But I appreciate
stories to tell.
I appreciate the kind words, but I'm going to have to disagree with you. You've got MS and it's a debilitating disease, and you know, it's just what you've done is remarkable. You know, the fact that you were able to overcome, whether it was, you know, medicine or whether it was God or whatever it was, but you were able to overcome and you didn't crawl up and, you know, get into bed, crawl up like a ball and just say, you know, I'm done. All right. You're not that kind of a person. You can't do that. You understood that you had things to do and you had people to touch. And I find it fascinating, you know, what you've accomplished and all the things that you've done, you know, since being diagnosed with MS. I mean, you know, it's amazing. Now, let me ask you something. As far as your books are concerned, first of all, what are the titles of your books?
Okay. My memoir is called Come Get Me, Mother, I'm Through, which was, that was the closing line of that little feature I used to do at the end of my radio show where Frank DeFramer used to call in. When I was finished, because I had I was a very young sounding kid and I was the nighttime DJ. I just say, come get me, mother, I'm through. And that was the end of my radio show. So that's what I named my memoir. My second book there, which is next to it, a white cover there, is a short story called The Death of Fairness. It concerns what happened to a small American town and its only radio station after the rescinding of the Fairness Doctrine when Ronald Reagan vetoed the Fairness in Broadcasting Act of 1987. Many people believe that's the beginning of the division we have in America. My third book, you know what I did, Ari, is I took that second book and I sent it off to one of these, because everybody's looking for content these days in Hollywood. Mm-hmm. And I sent it off to a company who evaluated the story. They said it was a really good story. It just was not in depth. It was a short story. Well, I took the idea to get into more depth, and that's what brought the third book. It's called Bonnie's Law, The Return to Fairness. Now, the third book I've got there is my doctor's book, my doctor, Dr. Alan Bowling, who was the one who changed my life when he told me to take vitamins, which I still find to be really funny. But I believe the changing of the medicine and the intense vitamin D intake is what fixed my multiple sclerosis decline. And so his book, Optimal Health with Multiple Sclerosis, is that book over there. I'm a big proponent of at least what he does. He wants you to look at every alternative. Yes, there are ways. You can't just take drugs to get over multiple sclerosis. You can't just take drugs to get over anything. You've got to take drugs if that's what they have for you. And then you've got to get your mind right. You've got to decide that you're not going to let this thing beat you up every day, that you're here for a reason. And for my reason is my wife. I've been married a few times. I was more than 20 years ago when I just happened to run into a woman when I was working one night. And 21 years later, I can tell you that after I got diagnosed and on that drive back to Miami from Naples, my wife and I bonded on that 3-hour conversation. And when I went home and I came home and I saw her after I was diagnosed, I looked at a different woman. I looked at a woman who says, well, if this is what's going to happen, then we're just going to figure out how to deal with it. And we're going to do everything we can. We'll get you the right doctors. We'll get you the right equipment. We'll get you the most important medicines. We'll do everything we can to get you through this. And so that's where my power comes from, is the relationship I have with my wife. After I got diagnosed and we cashed in Miami, and then the only thing I could think to do, Ari, was to move back home. My mom was still in my hometown. She's still alive, but she was in my hometown. And I thought, well, if I'm going to start to fail, then at least I'll have friends around me, guys I went to high school who can help me out. And so I went home. We took all the money I had and we started investing in houses and doing the fix and flip thing. My wife was not impressed with the way she was being treated by real estate agents. So she decided she was going to go get a real estate license. And then 2 years later, she was breaking records per capita in the state of Colorado in real estate, selling hundreds of houses in a very small little town, basically controlled the real estate market in that town. And then her company liked what she was doing so much. They brought her into a consultancy. So my wife is now a real estate consultant internationally.
Wow.
If you don't sell 100 houses, you can't talk to my wife.
Wow.
So the woman who was on my arm at the Grammys every year when we were just starting our life, after the diagnosis, turned into a very, very strong, powerful woman. I wouldn't have married her if I didn't think I was going to get that. But man, she has superseded anything I ever expected. And I live for that because we have a really good life. I have 4 children. We have 1 still in the house, much like you. I've got a 17-year-old. Actually, she's going to be 18 next month and she'll be graduating next June. Next June. She got a birthday. She'll be 18 next month and she's graduating next June.
When is her birthday?
She's the 18th. I've got 2 kids with December. She's December 18th.
Oh, because my son's turning 18 December 23rd.
Oh, my mother. See, the birthdays are big in December. My family, my other daughter's December 3rd, and my mother's December 20th. So we got a whole family in there. So there we go. Birthdays for your son.
There you go.
Congratulations on another kid getting through all this. And
again, thank you.
The torture he must have had to go through.
Yeah.
And the relationship you must have now with him. So I'm in awe of what you've had to deal
please,
with.
Please don't be in awe. Okay. Okay, great. So it's an incredible story. You know, I was so moved with your story. My hat's off to you going through what you went through, getting past it, you know, listening to whispers that brought you, you know, that brought you back, literally brought you back. And before we go, is there any words of wisdom that you'd like to impart on my audience?
You know, I'm spiritual without religion. We are a very, very tight family here, a very positive family who helps whenever we can. In fact, all the proceeds of both my books continue to go to the MS Foundation and the Heart Association. We are givers. I believe that you have to open your heart. As I always told my children when they were growing up, mm-hmm. life is a bouncing ball. If you bounce good things down, good things will come back. But if you bounce bad things down, bad things will come back. And that's how I taught my children. And to me, that's really as easy as it gets. Wow. If you give good, you'll get good. But you've got to really find good. Because some people think they're finding good, but they're not. You've got to be true to yourself and true to your surroundings and bounce that ball down good, because it will come back good.
Definitely words of inspiration. Definitely beautiful, beautiful words. Last but not least, well, sure. Two things. One, how can people get your book?
Thank you. I have a website, krcurry.com, krcurry, C-U-R-R-Y.com. All the information on my books are there. In fact, information on my upcoming book is up there too. I also blog. I tell stories and things that didn't make it into the memoir. As a matter of fact, I'm writing a story right now that's going to be up soon about my brush with greatness with Terry Bradshaw, which turned into a brush with greatness with Joe DiMaggio.
Wow.
It's crazy. But that'll be on my website soon. I tell little stories, things that I didn't get in the memoir.
Wow.
A lot of things made it on the cutting floor. So
wow.
That's where you can find me, krcurry.com.
And if they want to get in touch with you, I guess there's a link in
email
there to get in touch with you. Email.
Right there. Yes, sir.
Wonderful. Wonderful. Kim, thanks so much for sharing your story with my audience. I'm sure that many people in my audience have been inspired. I'm sure there are people with MS that are listening. And, you know, and I think you've given hope. You've definitely, definitely given hope. I'm hoping that they will reach out to you for some, whether it's for inspiration or comfort or just to schmooze. All right.
That's good.
Absolutely. That's good luck going forward. Good luck with the books. I'm so glad that our paths have crossed. It's been wonderful. Thank you so much. You've been listening to Whispers and Bricks, and I'm your host, Ari Shoman. Until next time, listen to the whispers, avoid the bricks, and never, ever give up on your dreams. Bye for now.
So that's it for today's episode of Whispers and Bricks. Head on over to iTunes and subscribe to the show. One lucky listener every single week that posts a review on iTunes will win a chance in the grand prize drawing to win a $25,000 private VIP day with Ari himself. Be sure to head on over to whispersandbrickspodcast.com and pick up a free copy of Ari's gift and join us on the next episode.